This episode is powered by denmeditation.com, with locations in Los Angeles that normalize meditation and make it available to all. Though meditation is the primary focus, the bigger goal is for people to understand and love themselves, thus creating more harmony in the community at large. To find out more about Den Meditation's teacher training programs, retreats, and all things Den Meditation, go to denmeditation.com. Hi, welcome to Den Talks Podcast. This is Tal Rabinowitz. I'm your host, and I am the founder of Den Meditation. I get to speak with Kirby Bumpus today. She is adorable and fun and so smart, an incredible woman. She has been working in public health, where she got her master's at Columbia University, and since then has kind of had this interesting track. She worked for the Robin Hood Foundation. She then got to work at the White House for the Office of the First Lady, Michelle Obama, for the Let's Move initiative. And we talk all about that, by the way. And then she worked for Under Armour when they worked with MyFitnessPal. And most recently, Sweetgreen actually created a role for her, and she's the head of social impact. So she is bringing food that might be overpriced for people to people in need who can't normally have access to it. She's incredible. She gives us a lot of tangible advice. I mean, literally, there's a plethora of advice of how to get certain jobs, how to trust your instinct, what to her constitutes a good job for herself. It's not always what people would think the great opportunities are. It can be about who you work for, what the experience is going to be, what she can provide. So she gets all into that stuff. So for people who are always kind of confused about what should I do next or what do I really want to do, this is a great episode for you. She's also just kind of a badass woman. And in April, she's going to be on a panel with a bunch of other badass women when we do our Den Talks Live with female bosses. It's April 25th. And we've got Ali Webb, the founder of Dry Bar. We have Sarah Tuttle, the founder of Olive in June. We have Iman, who's the founder of Sway Media. And of course, Kirby Bumpus again. So I really hope you like this episode. There's so much good stuff in here, so many good takeaways. And let me know what you think. I love that last name.
I love it too.
It's like it's cute.
I love my whole name.
And yeah, it's
I
was a great always name.
Like, I am the only. And then I found out there's another Kirby Bumpus on the planet.
What? Wait, we're here with Kirby Bumpus and we're finding out she's not the only one. We're saying how much we love her name.
Thank you. My mind was blown. First of all, it's a he.
Oh, that is weird, isn't it? My name, a lot of boys have my name. It is weird.
No. I felt better though because he's a few years younger than me. So at least I'm the original.
Yep.
But yeah, we've spoken, we check in every couple of years.
Wait, but how'd you find him?
So someone reached out to me on Facebook and was like, I had such a great time this weekend. I was like, I'm sorry. what are you talking about? They're like, we had drinks. We were at the party. And I'm like, I don't know who you are. And they're like, this is Kirby Bumpus, right? I'm like, yes, this is Kirby Bumpus. And then, you know, it took a lot of back and forth. And we finally realized that there was a male Kirby Bumpus who was in Massachusetts. And I had to find this guy.
Wait, but did you not have a picture on your Facebook page at the time?
I did have a picture on my Facebook page, so I don't...
You're like, uh-oh, what does that say about me?
I know, what does that say about me? But he's a white guy, so I guess the person just didn't look at the picture.
Yeah.
But this was back in college.
Or was really drunk and not paying attention at all.
Exactly. And so, yeah, now we check in every couple of years on, like, Instagram or Facebook.
Wait, I love that this, like, weird friendship has actually formed. Yes. Any similarities?
No similarities. He's a white guy. He lives on the East Coast. He's super nice. He seems to enjoy life. So I think we have that in common. But we just check in and see how each other's doing and make sure that we're upholding the Kirby Bumpus name.
Hey, I love that. Yeah. I love that you guys check in. It's
of
like, do you feel this?
I mean, we are connected for life.
Was he surprised too?
Shocked. Shocked.
Now, did they date by any chance? Do you know if anything happened between them?
That I don't know.
Wouldn't it be funny if somehow you're like, I kept them together. They found each other. Well, I love that story. So we are here with Kirby Bumpus, who is the head of social impact at Sweetgreen.
Yes.
Tell us what that means, because I would think some people would automatically feel like it's a social media like position, which it's not at all. So talk about a little bit, what does it mean? And it's a position they created for you, which is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great, great question. I think, you know, when you think about social impact, it really is kind of how businesses are using their revenue for good. So I'd say in the past, people have called it philanthropy or corporate social responsibility. And social impact really means more so like it's baked into the DNA of the company and it's not this separate arm. So I'm working closely every day with the marketing team, the supply chain team, our data team to find ways to make sure that we are, you know, giving back and leaving the planet better than we found it.
I love that. Do you feel like more companies are going to start making sure this position exists?
For sure. Yeah. I mean, I've met several people at different companies, whether it's Headspace or even like 21st Century Fox. Social impact is an actual title that is on the books in corporate America these days.
Now, are you like one of the first who had it, or did it exist and then they created it for you?
Yeah. So the social impact role has existed for several years before I came. And then they wanted to elevate the position and bring someone on the executive team that focused on social impact. So
talk about how you got here, because you've had quite a story, which I love. And I love
I
that.
Do too.
And I know, I mean, you should. And I love that they like picked you, and there's a reason they picked you for this job. So talk about a little bit where this all began, a little bit of your journey and like public health and all of it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's funny because if you would have asked me a couple years ago, do you see yourself working at a salad company? I would have said, what? Or even, you know, do you see yourself working at an athletic apparel company? I also would have said what. So, you know, it really started back when I was, you know, middle school, and always knew I wanted to help people and wanted to give back and wanted to serve. And I think, you know, in kind of the limited realm of what you think of when you think of those types of careers, you think doctor, you think medicine. So I kind of was on that track to become a doctor, was very much pre-med, was focused on psychology and human biology in college, and then, you know, did this internship in Harlem at this cancer center, so in a, you know, low-resourced community, low-income, focused on clinical work, where I would go to Harlem Hospital, got to go to Memorial Sloan Kettering and shadow doctors, and then there was this community health component that I really didn't understand what it was, but I was like, okay, it'll get me into the OR and get me to see patients. And I found that I actually loved the community health work so much more than the clinical work. And the community health work really involved going to health fairs and talking to people about the importance of prevention and screenings. And this was 2005, 2006. And so at the time, the project I was leading was like very high tech and very advanced. And it involved me using a tablet computer that was about
this big.
That had Wi-Fi or had 3G technology.
So and you guys were really on it.
We were on it. And I could sync into the scheduling system at the cancer center. So not only would I go to a health fair and say, hey, you know, it's important for you to get screened for prostate cancer, it's important for you to come get a mammography, I could say, and I can make an appointment for you right here on the spot.
That is amazing.
Right. So, I mean, that was a huge deal back then, and we found that the people, one, were making appointments, and two, the no-show rates went way down because people had a connection and people, you know, kind of made that commitment to me on the spot that they were going to come for the appointment. I'd say, you know, I'm going to call you the night before and I'll see you at the clinic when you come for your appointment. So it was really bringing this patient navigation philosophy to life in a different way.
So how old were you? 20?
I was 20, 21.
And this, like you said, you were doing this internship mostly for the idea of getting into med school, correct? Mm-hmm. So, and it's interesting because it was something more removed from you too. It's like mammographies, prostate exams. Mm-hmm. Like these aren't things that a 20-something-year-old is really concerned about. Right. So tell me about like the moment you started feeling it differently, where all of a sudden you're like, no, like something about this is really resonating with me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, first I had an incredible mentor in the doctor that had established patient navigation, Dr. Harold Freeman. And I just thought that what he was doing in terms of thinking about patient care outside of what happens in the doctor's office and thinking about the wraparound services for people once they're diagnosed with cancer, I just got so excited about the potential to educate people on what their health behaviors, you know, kind of the importance of healthy behaviors on, you know, the impact of not only disease, but just general wellness. Yeah, it was an incredibly like eye-opening experience.
Was it surprising for you?
It was shocking. It was shocking because I always thought, you know, I want to be a doctor. And, you know, in truth, when I was sitting in the operating room at Memorial Sloan Kettering and watching a woman who had late-stage cancer have her uterus removed, I was like, this is not what I want to do. This is a lot. And really enjoyed the connecting with people in the community and thinking about health on a population level and getting people before they were sick, and getting people to think about their wellness and kind of their everyday habits and how that builds to something much more important.
So how did that shift for you then from that point on, like the choices you were making, whether it be jobs or internships or applications?
Yeah, well, first of all, I learned that community health was public health and that that was a whole field that I had never even heard about before. So I started to explore, you know, graduate programs in that space and think about what types of careers existed. From my junior year on, I was then pretty steadfast in knowing that I wanted to do something in the public health space.
That's so incredible. So when you said, like, before, you were someone who always wanted to help people, like, mm-hmm. can you tell me any moments, like, as a kid, like, how did that reflect as a child?
So I've always been a pretty square child. I'd say that I've always had like a mom purse with the Band-Aids and the
You were the one who take care of everyone on the playground.
I've always been one of those, which is, a little bit of an oddball, but.
So, but you were, and you have a younger brother, you said, who's literally 11 months.
11 and a half months. Yeah. My brother, Will, and I are like super close in age and, you know, now like super close. We both live in LA and it's been pretty incredible to get to spend some like awesome time with him as an adult. I think, you know, I'm in a relationship. He's out there single, but it's really cool to spend time together before we each have our own families and we have those other like real commitments.
Were you guys close growing up?
It's funny. Growing up, we fought about everything. Who was going to take their bath first? Who was going to sit in the front seat? Who was going to sit closer to mom? And, you know, then I think once high school hit, I got my license and had to drive us both to school every day. And so started out, you know, with a little bit of a chip on my shoulder that I had to take my brother to school. And then realized he's not so bad. You know, like we spent 20 minutes every morning and then, you know, after school together. I was like, all right, you know, he's actually pretty cool. Like he's funny. He's pretty smart. And, you know, ever since we've been much closer. But we were not close growing up.
My brother and I got really close in college. Like that's when our like friendship really mm-hmm. began too. It's interesting. It's mm-hmm. like, cause you start to see them as like a companion, like
a real people.
Yeah. Right? You're like, oh, you're actually fun to hang out with. Cool.
Right.
So you changed what you thought you wanted to do in life. Mm-hmm. And then you really have done everything from like, you know, now you're at a salad company, as you say, Sweet Green.
I peddle salads.
You've been at Under Armour. You've worked at the White House. I mean, you've done everything. So talk a little bit about this idea of a lack of a roadmap for life, you know, being able to kind of being open and seeing what comes your way. Because I think you're the first to say where you are now is actually a perfect fit for you. It kind of encompasses a lot of what you've learned along the way. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. I mean, I think what's interesting is now I can kind of draw a very clear line in terms of what's led me to this point. But I could have never put this together had I tried when I was in high school or college or even grad school. I've always gravitated towards roles where like, one, where can I learn the most? And then two, where can I have the greatest impact? And each role has focused on health in some way, but again, could not have imagined it. So when I was in graduate school, I was doing graduate school and college, I was doing sexual health education and, you know, knew that I wanted to do health education and teach people about their habits, whether it was safer sex practices and condom negotiation or just trying to eat a little bit healthier. And then when I...
Condom negotiation, like convincing someone to use a condom?
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that there's a term for that.
Yeah. I mean, it's real, especially, you know, when you think about high school girls, which that was the population I was working with in college. You know, a lot, it's really wrapped into self-esteem and body image and just feeling like they have the words to communicate with their partner.
Yeah, and if you say this, is it going to ruin everything?
Is it going to ruin everything? Yeah. Or we're not even really in a relationship yet, but I think if I have unprotected sex, this might get us there. Ugh. But thinking, you know, and, you
You're
know,
like,
as an adult,
get you there.
As an adult, you know what those young people are exposing themselves to. So, you know, it's arming people with the tools to have those conversations. And so, you know, through that health education work, I learned more about, you know, just kind of the whole world of public health and just kept seeking more and more opportunities. So after grad school, I went to the Robin Hood Foundation where I was able to put my program evaluation skills to good use that I'd learned in grad school. I was a program officer focused in our education portfolio. So I would work on after school mental health after school programs, mental health based school clinics, other after school programs, and it was just an incredible organization of just really smart people that cared about alleviating poverty and helping poor New Yorkers. And then also just a good place to think about like what makes a really good program.
Right.
You know, most nonprofits are not focused on business acumen or metrics sometimes.
Tends
to be the downfall. So it was empowering to work with an organization like Robinhood that would arm nonprofits with like management assistance and board development and all of these tools that most nonprofits are typically weak in.
Do you feel like, so for you, it's like taking that next job, it just has to speak to you in some way?
Exactly. It has to speak to me, and I also have to feel like, one, like I can contribute, I can learn, and just make a big impact. So
has there ever been
like my guiding...
By the way, it's a great... And the reason I want to talk about it, I think it's so important because I do think... So many people feel like if they don't have the plan laid out, they're going to get nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I sometimes feel like it's the opposite. I feel like if you lay it out too much, you're going to get to the wrong place.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because you won't actually see the path you're supposed to take. So that's why I kind of want to dig into a little bit because you've had such success in just kind of trusting your gut a little bit. So
yes.
I want to talk about what that means for you and what it looks like. But also, was there ever a moment where you might have said no to a job that people thought you were crazy for saying no to? Or... Turn a direction that was just surprising for people, or took a job that might have appeared less than what people would expect you to take next, or something.
Yeah, I mean, so yes to all of those things.
Good. Let's dive in.
Turned down countless jobs, and have, you know, I think when I took the job at Sweetgreen, people were like, "You're going to go sell salads?" And you know, I had to do some education around one. This is a mission and values driven company, and you know, to be in an environment where the founders really care about leaving the planet better than they found it, and you know, to be in a position where I can leverage the really smart people around me to do some good with you know some of the revenue that we're bringing in, and also you know the tools and resources that we have at our disposal. So yes, people definitely thought that I was crazy there. And just going back to something you said earlier about taking jobs that speak to me, I think it's also important to not just say, oh yes, that's really interesting, I'm going to go there. Otherwise, you end up with a resume where every year you're in a different place.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I spent, you know, a year at Robinhood. I was in government for 5 years, 2 years at Under Armour, and now Sweetgreen. So, you know, there's certainly different things along my, like, 10-year work history, but I think it's important to show that you are committed.
There's like a loyalty and a commitment. Don't just jump ship the minute something gets hard.
Exactly. The minute something gets hard or the minute something else pops up.
By the way, I can speak to that too, having read a lot of resumes. That always makes me really nervous when I see like every year there's a different job. I'm like, wait, what? At a certain point, I'm like, it can't be that you hate it all. Like, what's happening?
Right. So I think that, you know, it's an important message to do the things that speak to you, but also be strategic about, have you gotten everything that you needed to get from this current role? And if not, like you need to stick with it for, you know, another year, another 2 years at least, and continue to not only learn, but also like, you know, foster those relationships. And especially when you stay in the same industry, which at the end of the day, I've been in health now for 10 years. You know, I run into colleagues all the time and we cross paths and there's always opportunities to collaborate. And so people remember you and they remember that. So just, you know, keeping those relationships close and tight and fostering and staying in touch with people is so important.
Absolutely.
And not just reaching out to people when you want something. That's one of like my big
pet peeves. Because it's so obvious.
It's so obvious. Like, hey, how are you? By the way, I'm working on this thing. As opposed to just checking in and saying like, hey, how you doing? Or, hey, I just saw that like incredible thing you did. Like it's so good to just reach out to someone and congratulate them for something that you see, as opposed to just like hitting like on social media.
That is a hugely great piece of advice for people. Cause I think people really underestimate A, how much it sucks to be asked for a million things. Like if you're asking, that means a million other people are asking too. So I'm with you. It's like, if you actually have a relationship with someone, own up to your side of the relationship.
Right.
And whatever that means.
And I'd say the other piece of that is also reach out to people when they're going through something. Like if someone is in, you know, any kind of a, God forbid, scandal or like there's a problem, like the the thing that can mean the most and what they will always remember are those people that reached out and those people that were there for them. Even if there's nothing that you can do, just say, hey, I saw this news, or hey, I heard this thing is going on. I'm so sorry. I'm here if you need me.
Yeah, 1,000%. I mean, I've worked in entertainment forever, so I know what that's about. Like, mm-hmm. we all just are on a cycle of like fired, hired, fired, hired. Yes. So, and there's always someone going through something. And I remember I always said one of the luckiest things that ever happened to me was I worked at the WB, which like no longer exists, then became the CW. So my whole department was fired. I was one of the youngest. I joke like if our plane went down, like nobody would know I died, because like, do you know what I mean? It was all like everyone else who got fired were like EVPs and this. Yes. And I was like the little director. Right. So I laughed.
Low
like,
man on the totem pole.
I was totally the low man on totem pole. But I always say that was one of the best things that happened to me for so many reasons, but mostly because it taught me what it feels like to go through that. And I always, from a young age, from that point, anytime anyone was fired or something weird happened or was what other people could deem uncomfortable, I was always one of the first people to reach out. And I remember when my ex-husband, because he was in entertainment too, his boss was getting fired. I mean, everyone gets fired, was getting fired. I remember him calling me.
Yeah, you're in a, that was a tough industry.
Yeah. And I remember him calling me being like, oh my God, what do? I just heard this. They just offered me this, but that affects her. And what? And I'm like, go into her office right now, close the door and be a friend and just tell her everything you know. It was like the best thing he could have done, because they ended up having a really great relationship, even though it could have been awkward and weird because he was getting offered her job. And like, and I'm like, it's not
people
about you.
Remember that.
Yeah. Like, you be the decent human being. But I know that all happened because like I knew how it felt. And so it was, I agree with you. I think it's so important to be there for people when they're down.
Yeah.
Because everyone's goes down. Yeah. Everyone, like we all have bad moments.
Yeah. And I think to that story, like one of my favorite quotes is a Maya Angelou quote that's, people will forget what you said, they'll forget what you did, but they will never forget how you made them feel. And that is so, so true. So even if you don't have the words and you don't know what to say, just be there for people and they will never forget what that moment felt like to them.
It's so true, because even in life, that's just the essence of life in general. Like, we all kind of form our stories with whatever details we want. Like, no one's story is 100%, right?
Right.
And it's all based on the essence of what you're getting from that moment. So whether it's an interaction with a person or a thing, it's going to be how you feel then being translated into words.
Right.
So if you take it the other way, it's exactly right. It's like how you make someone feel is going to be how they translate everything about you in those moments.
Exactly. In 20 years, you know, you're not going to remember every single word that someone said to you, but you are going to remember, God, that person really made me feel supported or loved or
happy.
Cared for. Exactly. Or some kind of joy. So it's just something I try to always remember, especially in those times when you're really stressed out.
When did you read that quote for the first time? Do you remember? And did it hit you the same way when you first read it, or is this something you went back to?
I think I was just fortunate enough to be like told that quote when I was young, like growing up. My mom's always told me, you know, it costs nothing to be nice to people. So just always be nice. You never know, one, what someone's going through. You also never know when you might run into that person again. And you also never know who that person knows. So just be nice. And karmically, it'll come back to you in the end.
Absolutely.
So I think, you know, being taught the be nice to people, and then, you know, the Maya Angelou quote also coming from my mother. I didn't even read it anywhere. It was literally told to me from a very young age.
Was she also, I mean, I love that she obviously instilled, you know, so much strength in you. Was also part of her, or was this innate in you, this idea of kind of being able to be more open to what comes your way? Like you said, taking chances on, let's say, a sweet green, or saying no to these other jobs that might have appeared as huge opportunities for other people, but you were okay saying no to something that might be like a huge opportunity because it just wasn't right. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I mean, she's been very good about being open. I would say that, you know, she comes from a slightly older school of, you know, you don't leave a job without a job.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
you've made her nervous a few times.
I've stayed true to that for sure. But no, she's definitely instilled, you know, you should do what you love and what you care about. At the end of the day, you know, she always says you are too smart and you have too many talents to be somewhere where you're unhappy or you feel like you're not contributing to something that you care about. So yes, she's always instilled.
I love that.
Yeah. I mean, it's something that sometimes, you know, I found myself sitting at my desk like, you are right, Mom. I am too smart.
No, but I love that, because that gives you a cushion of safety of not feeling like whatever you're in, life, work, relationship, that you're trapped there, because it just reminds you like, no, I have abilities that will be suited elsewhere as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, to your point on relationships, yeah, I'd say that that certainly applies. And I feel like I tell my friends that all the time, who are going through something, and I'm just like, you are a badass. Yeah. Like, you are the definition of a badass. You don't have to be dealing with this.
Right. Do they listen?
Sometimes they do.
You can't force them to listen.
You can't. People have to learn their own lessons. But yes, that have you felt to like many areas.
That in your life. Relationships? Like, have you had, I know you're with someone now.
Yeah.
But in general, have you feel
He's
like,
great.
Is he great? Is he amazing?
He's spectacular. Aww. Yeah.
Is he a little bit of a do-gooder too? Does he save the world also?
So he works on Capitol Hill. He certainly cares about public service and giving back. So that's
Was that important to you?
Incredibly.
I was going to say, how could you, if this is so much of who you are, like how could you be with someone, I guess?
I think it's important to be with a good egg. I think you don't necessarily want to be the same person. You don't want to care about this all of the same things. I think it's important for them to bring that kind of diversity of experience and passions to a relationship. But at the end of the day, you know, it was important to me to have a partner that is passionate about something, cares about public service, cares about their health, because that's so important to me and my everyday, and is driven. And I feel like I've, you know, found all those things.
Oh, look, she's like glowing and twinkling. Can you guys see it? It's so cute. How long have you been together?
About off and on 2 years.
And he's moving out to LA, you said.
Yep, that's the plan.
So that's a big deal.
It is a big deal.
Because he has excited. To switch jobs and all of that, right?
Yep, he's got to figure all those things out.
I love it. You're like, you're a badass. You can do it. Just say it to him, too. Yes. Wait, that's amazing. Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
What was your background with either, like, how were you raised, either religious or spiritual? What was your background? Do you feel like that's changed at all through what you do? And has it influenced how you make decisions?
I'd say certainly more spiritual than religious. Grew up kind of, you know, going to church on the major holidays, but always having a kind of grounding in caring about others and service. Not so much religious, but very, very grounded in, you know, just wanting to do the right thing and try to do good by other people. And that's certainly guided me in terms of the jobs and roles that I've taken and hopefully the people that I've attracted in my life as well.
Right. And do you feel like it's changed at all, or you feel like when you look back, you've kind of been steadfast with the same beliefs?
Fairly steadfast with the same beliefs. I've started meditating within, you know, the last 5 to 10 years. I guess I started in college. So 10 years, I had my 10-year anniversary.
Yay.
Last year.
You start in college? Like, what brought you to it?
I was taking a course on like health, and we talked about just mindfulness, especially when it came to eating and your behaviors. And one of the assignments was to do mindful eating and eat three different things, but spend like 2 minutes like just chewing and thinking and experiencing the flavors. And I was like, what? How am I going to do this? But not only did I think about, you know, the flavors and, you know, what I was experiencing, but also like how it made me feel. So it was, you know, try something really healthy. I think one of the things was like an In-N-Out burger. So it was all different, all very different types of food. And it was pretty eye-opening for me, because I guess I'd just been kind of bouncing through my meals and not being conscious of what I was doing, which is the way I think most people operate every day.
For sure. So what did you notice in that first experiment?
Yeah. I mean, I noticed that there are actually a lot of flavors in your food. I also noticed that when you're tuned into what you're eating and how you feel, you can make more thoughtful decisions about food and your relationship with it. I'm someone who, you know, my health is very important to me, but like my weight has certainly been like a roller coaster from the time I was younger. And so it was an eye opener in college to think about my relationship with food in a way that I had never done. I had more so just been, all right, I can I can eat this, but like I have to work out really hard, or I have to take a lot of workout classes, as opposed to thinking about, okay, well, why am I actually eating this? Like, yes, it's really good, but am I hungry right now? Or am I actually craving something sweet? Or do I just need to drink a glass of water? Or like, would a piece of fruit, you know, like satisfy that craving? And that assignment certainly opened up a totally different way of thinking.
So has it stayed with you?
Yeah. I think I've, you know, gone through moments where I've probably lost it a little bit and come back to it.
Like anything.
But I'd say that what really brought me back to more mindfulness was, you know, when I was at Under Armour, I was focused on my Fitness Pal and our like digital health community, and logging my meals and every single thing that I was eating really deepened my relationship with food. And, you know, I'd sometimes look at my remaining calories for the day and see, okay, I have 400 calories to get through dinner, so I'm not going to go crazy. I need to now, you know, like be very strategic and thoughtful about what I'm eating.
So what would you do with 400 calories for dinner? That's hard. At least for me, that would be really hard. So but I overeat.
part of it is just education. I think before, you know, I might throw like an avocado on the plate. But now I know, you know, half an avocado is like 140 calories. Like, I'm not going to do that because that's almost half of my meal. So, you know, thinking thoughtfully about like a really good protein. So, you know, I'd probably do some kind of like veggie stir fry and a wok with some teriyaki and garlic and call it a night.
That sounds delicious.
It is. And filling.
Do you still log your stuff down? Like, is that now habit from your old job?
Yeah. I'd say not so much when I'm traveling. When I travel, I try to just kind of just live and be and try new things. But day to day, you know, I think logging is so important. Otherwise, I just, you know, kind of lose track of it.
But I love what you said. There was something about logging that deepened your relationship with food.
Very much. I think by logging, I just got so much more thoughtful about what I was putting in my body and not only how it made me feel, but also, like, do I need to eat this much? Because now, you know, there's something about typing in, you know, a cup of M&Ms or something excessive like that. So just being more thoughtful about that stuff.
Now, you love food, right?
I literally love food.
Do you cook also?
I love to cook. I love to sample things. I love to go out to dinner. I love to try new places. I've been in LA now for 6 months.
We got a lot of good restaurants.
Fantastic restaurants. And also so close to like just the supply chain of really good food, and everything's in season. It seems like at all times. I've just had the best time being out here, especially in the winter where, you know, on the East Coast, I moved here from DC. You can't experience this type of incredible food supply. And I'm especially spoiled being at Sweetgreen, and, you know, we get free salads, and, you know, our supply chain is just incredible because we, you know, work on our supply chain team works on those relationships with farmers to get the freshest and best ingredients. And so, you know, every combination you do tastes really good there.
Hey, you guys, just a quick note, because we do get asked all the time, what are other things we can do? We have so many certifications. So if you're in the area and want to come and do some live, you should really check out our certifications. We have our big one. That is a 400-hour teacher training certification. That is incredible, not only if you don't want to be a teacher, but if you just want to go deeper in your meditation practice, where you learn about all lineages. We have all the Reikis, 1, 2, 3, and Master. We do intuitive healing, which is a longer program about learning how to read people intuitively and do readings. We also have an animal communications and a self compassion, so many. My point is, check it out. There's ways to dig deeper into your practice. There's ways to get certifications. Go to denmeditation.com and take a look. Sorry for the interruption, guys, but I want to talk about our next Den Talks Live event. They have been going so well. They're super informative and also really fun. The next one is Thursday, April 25th at 7:30 p.m. at the La Brea location. We are doing female bosses, and we have some badass ladies coming on. We have Tracy Picosta. She's the president of entertainment of NBC Universal. Iman Ubu of Sway Media. Sarah Tuttle of Olive & June. Kirby Bumpus of Sweetgreen. And per usual, some amazing gift bags with surprises from all of our sponsors, including Little Web, Quest, Ujjayi Shape House, Moto Yoga, and Four Sigmatic, and more. We always do light bites and drinks at the end as well, so you get a chance to really socialize and talk to everybody. And there's a Q&A, so you really do get so much out of this. It's always fun. We hope to see you there. Again, it's Thursday, April 25th. If you're interested, go to dentalkspodcast.com to reserve your space. Okay, so back to the good fight. Has there been anything that you feel like has surprised you that all of a sudden you felt like you needed to fight for out there, whether it be in the public health sector, or is there anything that's just surprised you? You're like, I had no clue I care this much about this.
Yeah, I think, I feel like many things have surprised me. One of the things that I found most shocking was when I was in the White House working on Let's Move, focused on physical activity and nutrition, was looking at school lunches and what kids are eating every day. I think we all have those memories of the school lunch tray and the chicken nuggets. For me, it was bagel with an absurd amount of cream cheese and then potato chips on top. And that was my lunch pretty much every day. But now that, you know, we know better, so we should be doing so much better with how we're feeding the next generation, and we know that kids' taste buds are developing when they're in elementary school. And so, you know, to me, I was shocked to think about kind of what we're exposing kids to in school lunch, which for many kids, this is their only opportunity to get a healthy meal because they're not getting it at home, or they're snacking at unhealthy foods at the convenience stores or, you know, wherever they can find snacks. And so to me, that was shocking. And I think what I find most outrageous now is seeing some of the standards that we put in place during the Obama administration being rolled back. So knowing that in July, you know, chocolate milk and strawberry milk are going to be reintroduced into school lunches, knowing that whole grains are going to start disappearing from school lunches. So right now, it's a requirement that at least 51% of grains be unrefined and whole, and that's going to be wiped away come July. So kids can be eating, you know, white rice and white
bread.
And
why is that? Is it just because it's cheaper? Is it because of connections with certain companies? Like, what is it? Like, what's the behind the scenes that none of us understand? Because for us, it's like, why would they even waste their time on rolling that back?
It's both. It's cheaper, and then there's also, you know, strong food lobbies behind each of these decisions. So it's painful.
Really painful. My next question would be like, have you ever had any major disappointments? Is that one of them?
That's a major disappointment for sure. But I am hopeful in that, you know, there are a lot of incredible organizations and companies that are, you know, working to change things when it comes to school lunch. So
I know that is really it's really sad. I mean, the fact that there's still like chocolate milk and strawberry milk that's still there is crazy to me.
It is.
Ugh, I actually think about it. For me, for our school lunches, I felt like it was always like the pizza and the tater tots. Like, I just remember that all the time. But that was the one we wanted. Like, when pizza and tater tots were out, we're all like, please, like, everyone lined up.
Well, of course. I mean, I think if kids, you know, are exposed to unhealthy food and that's all they know, that's what they're going to want.
Of course, yeah.
But when kids are exposed to healthy foods and fresh flavors and get to taste, you know, carrots or arugula fresh out of the ground. You know, I've been to classrooms where kids are taste testing foods and they're like, this arugula, it's like spicy.
Oh my God.
And so, you know, like for them to like associate and experience food in a different way and, you know, then take those same foods home and also like introduce their parents to them and start to, you know, try to drive some of those decisions around what the family's eating. It's incredibly exciting. But that can only happen when we facilitate those types of experiences with food to happen. So
how was it working in the White House?
Incredible.
Was that like when you got that job, was that just like a pinch me please moment?
That was like a career highlight and will be a career highlight forever. I think, you know, one, working in such an incredible and historic office, but two, working for you know, the president and first lady who walk the walk and talk the talk was incredible. And to, you know, work for First Lady Michelle Obama, who really genuinely cared about and still does care about children and their families and their health and their health behaviors, it was incredible. I'd have days where, you know, it was a long day or a stressful day and, you know, you start to, you know, get tired or frustrated and you I literally had to pinch myself and say, I am walking through the White House. I am, you know, a part of something that is so much bigger than me. I'm a small part of it, but I'm a part of something that is huge in terms of transforming the future for the health of the country. So just an incredible career experience.
Isn't that crazy? Like every day you're walking those halls.
Yes.
Did you have to like put your stuff through security like every time you were walking?
Oh, every day had to go through, you know, Secret Service and metal detectors and all of that stuff. But, you know, you understand why.
I remember I did an internship in the House of Commons. Mm. And I remember I only had one suit. I was lucky I even had a suit because, as you can tell, I'm not. But I remember every day being like, holy fucking shit. It's like you walk in there and I'm like, oh, my God. It's like, A, the most stunning architecture and it's insane. And then you'd see like, I mean, just what you see and witness firsthand. And you're like, I can't believe this is actually real and I'm standing here. It's pretty incredible.
It's absolutely incredible. And you also, you know, have a great appreciation for the Secret Service agents that are there to defend and protect and just make sure that, you know, you're staying safe every day. And that's their job and that's what they've been trained to do. So, yeah, it was eye-opening.
Back to, like, the advice you were giving people earlier. Mm-hmm. You've now said it about Michelle mm-hmm. and about the founders of Sweetgreen. Mm-hmm. Is who your boss is important to you as far as like either your mentor or the person above you that you're kind of taking orders from? Is that also a huge factor in your decision making?
Incredibly important. I think, you know, I learned that throughout different roles, just how important it is to ladder up to someone who is in line with kind of what you care about and what's most important. So yes, absolutely. I think that would be another piece of advice for anyone who's looking at a job or considering a job is really trying to get a good understanding of either, you know, what your hiring manager cares about, but especially what the founders care about and the decision makers at the company care about. Because if that's not in line with ultimately what you want to do, you're not going to be able to make any headway. And I've been very fortunate throughout my career to have, you know, a lot of really incredible bosses and, you know, CEOs around me.
I think that's so important. I feel like I actually took a few jobs that surprised people, and it was almost always because of the person I was going to be working for. Because I always find when I'm working for someone that I don't feel like is smarter than me or someone I can learn from, I just start shriveling into like this yucky little beast. It's like, because I like to be inspired and you can learn, there's so much to learn from everyone and everywhere. So I do think it's really important to be really inspired by the people above you.
Yeah. And when you are working for someone who, you know, inspires you, it's like you can do so much more.
Absolutely.
You not only like grow and develop professionally, but like your work output is just incredible because you want to go above and beyond for that person. You want to impress the person that impresses you.
Right. And also like anyone, you're going to have shitty days. Like you said, like you're in the White House and you're going to be tired. You're going to be pissed off. You're going to be annoyed at that person too sometimes. Right. So if you're not with that foundation, then you get kind of screwed.
Right, exactly.
I mean, think about it. If you don't start there, because there's going to be moments you're frustrated with them anyway.
Exactly. Like, but sometimes you can't identify it. Like if you're not being thoughtful about that, you can just be like, God, I'm just so frustrated. But, you know, that's why I think it's so important to think about who it is that you're surrounding yourself with and who you're working for. And you can be tuned into that and recognize, you know, when you're really frustrated and you feel like you just can't get out of that rut, like what that is. Like it's actually a lot more, it's more deep than the project that you're working on. It's actually, you feel like you're misaligned with that person.
Right. Talk about being a woman in the industry. So for instance, like as we talked about, I was in entertainment, which is obviously very, not necessarily heavily male, but it's a male feeling, it's a male culture. Mm-hmm. And you know, everything going on with Me Too, that's coming out now. Mm-hmm. What is in your industry, is it equal? Did you feel like you had to fight harder as a woman, or is it more female? Part of me was wondering, because inherently it's kind of like a nurturing sector. Mm-hmm. Like talk to me a little bit about being a woman in that industry.
Yeah, I mean, I think in public health especially, it's such a female-driven space.
Yeah, that's what I assumed.
Yes, it is. In grad school, I can't remember the exact breakdown, but I think it was something like 70% female.
So funny. So
it was, it, you know, a lot of female energy. I'd say we'd go down to main campus. I did my master's in public health at Columbia. So we'd go down to main campus a fair amount to study down where, you know, like the business school and the law school and, you know, just the other graduate programs were, so we could get some more male energy sometimes.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
So the good news is, but then sometimes they say women can be really competitive. Sometimes women aren't always out to help women. Women, have you felt that at all?
Women can be very competitive. I've, you know, certainly experienced some of that, you know, competitive or jealous energy. But, you know, for me, I just kind of try to kill them with kindness. And I think it's a lot harder to be mean to someone who's nice to you as opposed to someone who is just like taking it in like, okay, I'm sorry.
You know, I kind of love that.
Yeah.
It's hard to be mean to someone who's being nice to you.
It really is at a certain point. Yeah. It really is. It's kind of like, you know, you make the person like reflect like, wait, well, why am I being a jerk?
Yeah, it's true.
So I come from a kill them with kindness place.
Do you feel like, how many times do you feel like you've been up against that? Has there been any like pitiful moments that you're like, oh, thank God I changed that?
Yeah. I mean, I think it just inherently happens when you have, you know, a fair amount of women. But I also think I've been very fortunate to be, you know, surrounded by great female role models. And also, you know, I try to lift up, you know, women that are younger than me or, you know, in internship like positions. Like whenever I go to an event, if I don't have a plus one, I try to get a plus one so I can bring a former intern or, you know, a younger.
I love that.
I think it's so important to open up those spaces and rooms and networks to, you know, people that have minimal exposure or opportunity to walk into those spaces. So, yeah, I mean, my former interns at the White House have come with me to many events and many conferences and all kinds of stuff.
Oh my God, you probably made their day.
Yeah, I mean, we have the best time together because, you know, at the end of the day, we're both learning something, yeah. Different things, but, you know, we're both getting exposure to something different.
Especially from the White House, tell me, what do you feel like you learn the most? Because I know you also worked, you were there when the Affordable Care Act. Thank you. Okay, yes. I'm like, AIRA Act? I'm like, that makes no sense. Affordable Care Act started,
yeah.
Correct?
So I was at the Department of Health and Human Services when the Affordable Care Act started, which is where the Affordable Care Act like came out of.
It was birthed.
So I'd say there I learned a lot about the federal health system. I think it was, you know, I started there in 2011, which is, you know, right after the Affordable Care Act was passed, but we still had, you know, lots of changes and amendments to make. And there I learned a lot just about like the process,
yeah.
And like how decisions are made, how changes happen, and, you know, what federal government looks like. I think growing up, I never imagined that I would be work at a federal agency, but learned that, you know, there's some like incredibly, you know, I'd always thought of it as very like archaic, and going on the inside and, you know, really working at a federal agency, I learned that there are just some brilliant people making policy and, you know, who care deeply about change and about improving the health of Americans. And so it was, you know, just an eye-opening experience. But in terms of lessons that I learned, we were very much building the plane as we were flying it at the White House. In the Office of the First Lady, it's a very small team. And so, you know, we weren't working on Syria or wars, but we were working on, you know, girls' education initiatives. We were working on physical activity and nutrition. We were working on initiatives for, you know, veterans and their families. And that, to me, was just an incredible lesson on having a fairly small team and doing a lot of really incredible work and, like I said, building the plane as you're flying it.
I love that. Yeah. What about the notion of, like, the hard decisions that have to be made? Mm-hmm. Like, how does that come in? Because, I mean, what you do is so amazing, and it has such a beautiful outlook on life and just wanting to help, but especially, like, in government when there's, like, a budget mm-hmm. and certain things. How does that all come into play, like, learning those lessons or those harsh realities of basically not everyone's going to be happy at all times?
Yeah. I'd say I truly learned that at the Department of Health and Human Services, you know, when I was reporting into the Assistant Secretary for Health, and he had several offices and several commissions underneath him, and so he had to, you know, approve all kinds of plans and budgets, and recognizing that people were coming into the office, you know, hour after hour with their proposals and their plans, and realizing, like, these are all great ideas, but like we're not going to be able to do all of them. And so the importance of prioritization and thinking about, okay, what has the best chance of moving the needle forward, and, you know, putting your sights there.
That's interesting. Like, so it's like, how can you be strategic still in a positive way and not dwell on like what you can't do and just be really excited about what you can do?
Exactly. And putting the energy and the resources behind what you can do and what you can accomplish.
What's been your biggest disappointment? What we talked about earlier, like the
school, probably what I see happening with school lunches is certainly, certainly a massive, massive disappointment.
But
I am hopeful about the future.
I love it. But I am hopeful, I swear.
I am, because I know that there are enough smart people that care about this, that, you know, things have got to change.
Is that hard for you to do something like that where you're, I mean, that must be hard to just in general in politics because the administration's changed. But I'm sure this happens like anytime you leave a job because so much of your job is about action.
Right.
Is it hard when you see something you've done kind of unravel and there's really nothing you can do from where the position you're at now?
Absolutely. And, you know, it gave me greater empathy for administrations before me. But, you know, to see the Affordable Care Act start to get changed and then to see school lunches start to shift. And, you know, I spent 5 years in government and those were some issues that were near and dear to my heart. So to see changes being made there, that certainly was tough. But it gave me greater empathy for, like, this is how government works.
Yeah.
You know, like, this is, you know, for better or worse, like, we have a system in place where, you know, changes and amendments can happen.
Constantly.
Exactly.
Sounds like it's like we're building on, it's like build it, tear it down. And then at some point, one thing sticks, I guess. In working in this industry, how is your point of view? I mean, because you've done so much and you've been on the inside for so much, how has your point of view of the world changed?
Yeah, I mean, I think Sweetgreen has really opened my eyes to the food system and the importance of transparency and appreciating and knowing where your food comes from. I think before this role, I just kind of, not that I thought food appeared on my plate, but I didn't think about, you know, for most restaurants, and luckily it's not like this at Sweetgreen, it's just, you know, they call a distributor and they kind of send their carrots or their cherry tomatoes or their kale from wherever it comes from. And there's no relationship or connection to the farmer and the person that's growing it. And what I've learned in this role is the importance of, you know, our supply chain team, which fosters and, you know, manages those relationships on a day-to-day basis so that they're working with the farmer to ensure we're not only getting the best ingredients and the freshest ingredients, but we're also working with them and our culinary team to come up with menus each season that reflect what they can grow at the right quantities and like what's in season.
Oh my God. So you're constantly like helping each other, which is nice.
Yeah.
So it's not just like, oh, well, you don't have this for us this year. Well, we're moving, going elsewhere.
Exactly. So the importance of that relationship, and I'm just, you know, kind of in awe of that supply chain team because so much of what they do is not only making sure that, you know, great ingredients show up on the menu, but also that those menu items reflect what makes the most sense for the farmers that are growing it.
What's something else like we all need to know about like the food industry? Something that like most of us just don't know and we should know.
Yeah, I'd say the importance of transparency. I would also say thinking about, you know, added sugars and some of the things that are in your food that you may not have paid any attention to. So one of the things that blew my mind when I came to Sweetgreen is how, you know, we make our own hot sauce. Like, so we used to use sriracha and then the team discovered that there's actually added sugars in sriracha. So the culinary team sat down and figured out how to make their own hot sauce and used roasted carrots to sweeten the hot sauce instead of adding sugar.
Wow.
My mind was blown.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, it's like those kinds of innovations that are thinking differently about food and just being smarter with food. Also, our teams worked with Sir Kensington to reformulate mayonnaise to ensure that, you know, we're using a mayonnaise that doesn't have...
Mayonnaise is like the only thing I really don't like. I'm like, just the idea of it always. It's so funny. I don't know why, but keep going.
Yeah. You know, so we use mayonnaise in, you know, a few of our dressings, but ensuring that that is like the best quality possible. So yeah, I was just kind of blown away that... that companies are very few, but companies are starting to think about that.
So you coming into this role that was kind of created for you, do you feel the pressure? Were you nervous? Excitement? Like what?
Absolutely. I mean, I think I would be like crazy to not feel pressure and not be nervous. But I, you know, honestly, these days, I think like the biggest pressure is like, are my ideas big enough? Because, you know, there's such excitement and enthusiasm and like passion for us to do some really incredible things and, you know, not only transform the food system, but when it comes to social impact, you know, what I recognize and what our founders recognize is that, you know, our mission is to build healthier communities by connecting people to real food. At the end of the day, we sell a $15 salad, and that is not accessible for the vast majority of the country. And so when it comes to social impact, we're thinking about ways to expand food access. And how do we, you know, allow more and more people to have, you know, exposure and the opportunity to experience fresh, real food? So we partner with organizations across the country that double food stamps or double WIC benefits, which are nutrition benefits for mothers. We've done a community development project in South LA where we took what was once a liquor store and we worked with the LA Food Policy Council through this incredible program that they have called the Healthy Neighborhood Market Network. And they partnered us with this liquor store called Hank's. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, went in there kind of HGTV style, gave them a new roof, a new refrigeration system. And then our design team that works on the design for our restaurants went in and worked with the daughter of their own owner. Her name's Kelly. And, you know, came up with an aesthetic that speaks to the community and, you know, uses colors that, you know, that resonated with Kelly. And, you know, they have a whole mural outside and we created a community space within the store. And it's, you know, not much bigger than, you know, this area that we're sitting in now, but it's a table with six chairs that they've been able to use for birthday parties and book clubs. And now they're doing nutrition education classes. And so
this is all in a liquor store.
This is all,
I love that.
It's now a convenience store or mini market. But yeah. And so we've now turned that space into more of a food access hub and more of a safe space within the community that, you know, I think Kelly's just coming up with all kinds of ways to use that space for good in her community.
So you two, I mean, you're such an amazing human and you have like so much poise and like it's incredible, like your outlook. I love it. And you had a very successful mom, Gail King's daughter. How was that being raised? I mean, I feel like what's amazing is you are you, clearly you on your own. But did you feel the pressures? Did that almost push you to kind of do your own stuff?
I mean, I guess, you know, most people don't want to do what their parents do, typically.
True.
But I think, you know, my mom has just always been such a hard, like, incredible worker. I think she's super smart. She, you know, anchored local news since before I was born. And so, you know, that's kind of all that I've known. So I don't even know what that would possibly be like. But I'd say in terms of how it's influenced me is just, you know, at this point, I'm 32, she's 64. She's literally double my age and sleeps half the amount that I do.
Oh my God.
And I mean, she has to be up at 4 a.m. every day to anchor the news. And so, you know, I just like, I bow down in that. I think, you know, she inspires me every day to want to do more and like push myself harder and, you know, just try to do as much as I can with everything that I've been given, which has been, I've, you know, already lived an incredible life and just want to do as much as I possibly can.
So if you have one piece of life advice for people, what would it be?
One piece of life advice. I would say, like, try to stay positive. Like, I think that people remember, like I said, how you made them feel. And like, if you are a Debbie Downer, like no one appreciates that. Like, no one wants to be around that. And it's okay. I'm not saying like you shouldn't have a down day or you shouldn't get upset, but like there's in most days, there's a lot to be happy about and a lot to be grateful for. And so I'd say like, try to stay positive. Another great thing that my mom has done for both my brother and I is had us keep a grateful journal. And so, like, from the time we were little, we were writing five things that we were grateful for. And like,
how old were you when she implemented that?
Probably around the age of 8.
Wow.
But it was like this beautiful book and, you know, something that I like got excited to write in every night. And sometimes, you know, one of the things I was grateful for was breathing or going to school or I'm about to go to bed. I would literally write that. But it was that moment of gratitude and putting pen to paper on those things that were meaningful to you and made you think more thoughtfully about like, oh gosh, I can't come up with anything to be grateful for today. Like, I need to be more thoughtful about my day tomorrow. I think positivity and gratitude will get you really, really far.
I love that you each had your own book.
Yes. Yeah.
That's so sweet. And you still do it.
Yes. Yeah.
Different book. Like, did you fill it?
Totally. Gone through many books.
But I love it. You still do it.
Yeah.
And did she, when you were little, would she check on it? Was it something like she would check on and make you do?
Initially, she had to check on us. And then it became something that we actually enjoyed doing.
Does your brother still do it?
I think so.
You should ask.
I'm pretty sure.
And please report back, because okay. Now I want to know if it like okay. stuck with both of you. Because I do, I agree. Look, I'm a huge, everyone knows I talk about it all the time, I'm really big on gratitude. Mm-hmm. But I do think even like writing it down as a kid, like you said, even if it's I'm going to bed, you're just training yourself for one, at least for a moment,
right.
to actually, you know, bring up feelings of positivity. And like yes. training your muscles in anything is hugely important. So like you said, whether you're switching the relationship of food and learning how to think about it differently, mm-hmm. or whether you're taking a moment to even bring in the energy of positivity, like that only helps you do it more and more and more and more every day.
Yeah, and it makes you smile. I mean, like there were some days where I would write down like, I said something really smart in class today.
Aww.
And like I'd get really excited and like that moment of pride like washed over me all over again.
So talk about the days that like sucked. Like, I don't know, you went to school, everyone hated you that day. Or yeah, I mean, we've all been there. I yeah. feel like you're the kid who's ostracized for the day and like you don't yes. want to go to school the next day. Like you'd still find a way to come up with five.
Yeah. They might have been weak, but I came yeah. up with five. Yeah.
I love that. Oh my God. I love that. So let's get to your four U's. So four quick answers. Good takeaways okay. for the audience.
Okay.
What's your current obsession?
So I have so many obsessions. Can I have more? Can I have more than one?
Sure. I love it.
Okay. So my first one is Sichuan.
And just so you know, your next one's food, drink, or object you can't live without. So there might be one for that too, out okay. of your obsession list.
Okay. Sichuan. One of my brother's friends just started this whole line of Sichuan spices, and I'm obsessed. Like, I've been putting this like Sichuan spice and oil on my eggs. I've
Ooh.
Been putting it on salmon. It is so good. So that's probably obsession okay. number one.
Love it.
Obsession number two is Ear Hustle, which is, have you listened to this podcast?
No.
Oh,
do
my
tell us.
Goodness. It is taped in the San Quentin prison.
Oh, I would love this.
And it's hosted by a prisoner as well as a volunteer within the prison. And they interview prisoners and talk about things like, what's it like picking your cellmate? What's it like on death row? What is it like, you know, when you are about to go to get out and you're going through reentry? What are conjugal visits like? I mean, they talk about all of it, and they get all these different prisoner perspectives, and it's from the inside and taped in the prison. So that I'm just obsessed and like fascinated by the criminal justice system and what that experience is like
so good.
For prisoners.
So good. Okay.
That's my obsession.
So what's your food drink? Would that be, I guess that would be part of the session. Or do you have a food drink or object you can't live without?
So this is not, doesn't sound very healthy, but ribeye. I love a good ribeye steak.
I love that. I love that. This is good.
It's so good.
Is there a place that you particularly like, whether it's here or from DC or?
Honestly, I mean, I love to grill. So I love to just grill my own
How
ribeye.
How do you prepare it?
Oh, so I pre-sear each side.
Yep.
A little garlic, a little rosemary, black pepper, and I can never pronounce it, but Worcestershire sauce.
I know, I'm the worst at it too, but that sounded good.
It's spectacular.
Yum. Yeah. I love that. Okay. What's the first thing you do when you wake up?
Drink water. I mean, I drink like a massive Nalgene of water that I keep by my bedside.
I need to do that. I'm really bad at drinking water.
I mean, it's a great way to start the day.
I know.
Because you've got three glasses before you even start. And it just feels so much better.
Wait, say that again. At minimum, you have, what does that mean?
So like three glasses of water. So like the Nalgene is like 32 ounces.
So you drink that whole thing before you wake up?
I drink almost the whole thing.
Before you get out of bed?
Yeah.
You like put my whole day to shame before like 2 minutes of being awake. I'm like,
it's just water. But even if you just start with a glass and see how you feel.
I'm so impressed.
Start
oh my God. I'm like, you drink that whole thing before you get up.
I drink an absurd amount of water.
No, I mean, by the way, and her skin is like perfection. So
water and
we all
sunscreen.
Know what I'll be doing tomorrow. I'm just kidding. I do the sunscreen, but that's because I'm like see-through. Favorite self-care hack?
I always have tea bags with me. So that sounds kind of weird, but I travel a fair amount. And so when I'm on planes, I like to just get a glass of hot water and I'll just do, you know, some mint tea And it's just like a nice little like refreshing thing to have on the plane, especially since when you're traveling, you know, you can get just like kind of like bloated and retain water, and mint tea just kind of helps with all of that.
Now you're speaking my language. I love tea.
Me too.
So I'll do that. I never bring tea bags with me. Mm-hmm. I also find, and this
if I pass a little tea station in a hotel, you better believe I'm taking some.
Yeah, no, me too. I remember when I was really little and I went to camp in Israel and I hurt my eye and I like couldn't open my eye, and they gave me a tea bag, like they warmed the tea bag up and they had me put it on the eye, and it really helped.
Oh, interesting.
And weirdly, I've researched everything. It's funny, I've never researched it. I'm sure people, if you know, let us know. So now every once in a while,
super curious.
When something's like every once in a while, if I get like a rash or something, like I'll put a tea bag on it and it sometimes helps.
Oh, interesting. Okay. I'm going to have to try
that. Just like if you're a lover of tea, why not? You have them around all the time. So there you go.
I've got the bags.
I know. So you're amazing. And we're going to do her personal practice. So nobody like tune out, but like, thank you for coming and sharing. And I mean, especially you gave us so much advice on people who just are in, there's so many people who are just, even people who've been in a industry for a long time, there's a lot of confusion on like where to go, what choices to make. And I think you've shared so much that is so helpful. And you guys, and if you liked it, we are doing a panel in April. So look it up. Female bosses. She's
so excited.
It's in great company. We have Allie Webb from Dry Bar. Yes. And we have Sarah Tuttle from Olive June and Iman from Sway Media. I mean, it's going to be incredible. So if you want a powerhouse of women that can really help give advice and also just are super connected to the world in a great way that we are, you know, in envy of, please come and join us. It's another Den Talks Live. So thank you. You're a pleasure. Are you going to wear this when we do our panel?
I might be.
I like it.
I was explaining to Tal that I thought the panel was today, and so I came all gussied up for the podcast.
I know, but if you're watching this versus just listening, she looks beautiful.
You may see this again.
And I look like a wet dog. So like, one of us did not think it was the panel. You're amazing. Thank you so much, Kirby.
Thank you.
And maybe the other Kirby's listening too. So hi, Kirby Bumpus.
I'm
going
to send this to him.
Yeah, send it to him. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. Really appreciate it.
So now Kirby's going to lead us in her personal practice.
Thank you. So one of the things that I love to do, my family's instituted this kind of selfie a day practice where it's my mom, my brother, and I on a text chain, and every single day we have to send a selfie. So, you know, for example, the other night it was my brother sitting at the chair in the dermatologist's office. And that to me is so much more interesting than if he just texted, "I'm at the dermatologist's office," or my mom sending a picture from, you know, a taping that she was at in Times Square, or, you know, sometimes it's just me on the couch saying, "Hey." But I think it's just such a great way to reconnect and, you know, share a little bit of insight into your day and like make it interesting. And also, like, it's good to see like the faces of people that you care about. So it's a great way to check in, and I highly encourage it for, you know, girlfriends, family, friends. It's a nice practice and brings a smile to my day a couple times a day.
Den Talks podcast would not exist without these incredible people: Nicole Rappi, Reem Edon, Hayden Fungheiser, Kim Bielek.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.